you, Bob and band. Good morning, everybody.
Good
morning. It's nice to see you from up here again. I like the front of your faces rather than the back of your heads. It's much nicer. Well, today I get to wrap up this short series that we've been on while Pastor Dan is away. This series called Upside Down, as you can see. While I was preparing this message, I found this picture, not knowing we had already used it. And I was like, man, I'm onto something here. I was like, Debbie, I'm going to put this in the slides. And she goes, well, we're already using it. It's like, oh, cool. But last week, we were blessed with a message by Pastor Casper, who was here. And he talked about being the salt and the light of the earth. And he walked us through Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus talks about this. He's preaching to his followers, preaching to people like us, to believers. That's who he's preaching to at the Sermon on the Mount. And through this sermon, Jesus is doing exactly what this title says. He's turning the world as we know it today, as the people of that time knew it. He's turning the world upside down. Speaking of the world, before we get started, I know we're all really jealous of Pastor Dan, who is soaking up the Florida sun right now, getting his tan on. He actually sent me a picture of a giant fish this week. I was like, cool, man. But I'm really happy he got to go on a vacation because it gave both of us a break from each other. But his timing was really interesting, and I'll tell you why. Because before he left, he said, I hope he doesn't get bad. I do a really good Dan impression. Matthew, you're preaching on February the 20th. I said, sounds good, Dan. I got it. I'm all over it. And then he goes, by the way, your topic is on anger and lust. See ya. It's like, can I choose a different day? But it's true. We are talking, and Jesus is addressing these things in Matthew chapter 5. And I know these things can be scary. They're intimidating. They're awkward. Like, we do see Jesus say, Dwayne read it for us. Jesus says, and whoever says you fool will be liable to the fire of hell. Okay. That's intimidating. But we know Jesus is using these extreme illustrations to get to what's most important. Jesus wants to get to the heart. Jesus wants to speak into our hearts, the very center of who we are. It's our inmost being. Because when we say he's turning the world upside down through this teaching, really what we're saying is that he wants to transform what's in our hearts. He wants to transform it. Not just the physical body, not our actions, what we're doing, but a true transformational view of the gospel. And I'll admit, again, when Dan showed me what I was going to preach on, I was like, I don't know what to say about this stuff. But then I actually took the time to look at it. I got past, you know, those scary verses. I looked deeper, and that's when it started making more sense. Because at a first glance, most people like me will read through this passage and see it through a lens of moralism or a lens of good behavior. And that's why hearing this part of Jesus' message can feel intimidating, because when we read that, all we see is, of course, how sinful we are. In my case, how angry I am all the time. As well, we do see the consequences that come of these emotions. But his goal here is not to scare us. That's not Jesus' goal. Like I said before, his goal is to get into here. Because like the Jews that he's speaking to at this time, we can live our entire lives doing the right thing and never understand the gift that Jesus is and the gift that Jesus gave to us. So the danger in all of this is making faith into a system of rules that have to be followed. And we convince ourselves that if we don't follow these rules perfectly, then we aren't faithful believers. We're not good enough. We aren't good Christians. Because on the outside, I know I do all the right things. I say all the right words. I pray. So that means I'm a good person. I'm a good Christian. I thought about it in this way. So I played a lot of sports growing up. And as a guy who has played a lot of sports, when it comes to referees, oh, I got so good at looking at a referee, and I would smile, nod my head, say, yes, sir. And that's not what I wanted to say to him at the time. I'm pretty sure he knew this, but I got really good at faking what I really felt because it was easier. Jesus is speaking to the heart, and his desire in this is that through him, we would be transformed. So when we see Jesus talking specifically about anger, obviously we see him say these things. Everyone that is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to counsel. And then, thrown into the fire of hell, that part. And that's intense. But in these verses, including the passage about lust, Jesus is speaking in hyperbole. It's a big word for me. And I know most of us know what hyperbole means, but an exaggerated statement or claim that is not meant to be taken literally. That made me feel better when I researched that. Okay, cool, Jesus. So when we break it down and look beyond the morality of what we hear in his words, here's what Jesus is actually saying. He's saying when we look at God's commandments, anger is closely related to murder. Because in a lot of translations, the word murder will be where it says anger. I'm going to take a guess that none of us have murdered anybody. We're going to move on. And with adultery, when we hear this word, we think about the physical act that takes place. But for both of these things, Jesus wants to know what's going on in here. That's why he says, if anyone looks at a woman lustfully, he has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And that's what I emphasized throughout all that, in his heart. Again, maybe we probably didn't murder anybody, and we probably didn't commit adultery, but that's not what Jesus is focused on. He's focused on our core. He wants us to recognize that our faith is so much more than just doing the right thing. These are heart issues. Things that will set back our relationship with Jesus if we don't give these things up to him. And I say it every time I'm up here, and I'm going to continue to say it, but it's so easy for me to say that, and it's way harder to do it. Because I can stand up here, and I can look cute in my sweater and my tie. I know Nelly thinks I look cute. But I will be the first person to admit that I am a sinner. Just like any other person, I'm a sinner and I sin. I hold grudges. I get really mad. I see some youth in here. They have told me before that when I'm mad, I've got this disgusting neck vein that pops out. And I didn't notice it until I think it was Camille Labar pointed it out. And I was like, well, now you know. I don't even have to say anything anymore. They just see that and it's over. So yeah, sometimes I scream. Sometimes I say foul things to people who hurt me. When we see Jesus say in Matthew again, it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell. So if that's the case, then I probably don't deserve both of my eyes, and I probably don't deserve both of my hands either. And Jesus knows this. For example, I'll give you an illustration to help it make sense. A couple months ago, I was standing up here preaching again. And I don't know what I was talking about specifically, but I do remember that it was warmer that day, and I left that day feeling good. I said, I got the chance to preach the good word to my friends, you know, and I know God was working through me that day. That's cool. That's a cool thing to get to experience, and I'm glad I got that. So I was driving home. The sun was out. My windows were down. My music was on. It was probably Taylor Swift or something. I was feeling good. I was thinking about what I was going to have for lunch. But I thought, before I go home, this is a good time to get some gas before the week starts. And there's this BP station on Woodward near where I live that sells it for like $2.98. It's crazy. But that means it's packed. So I was like, okay, I got time. I got nothing else to do today. I don't mind waiting. So I pull up. I'm waiting in line like everyone else, like they usually do. And I probably wasn't waiting for more than 10 minutes. It really wasn't that bad. And finally, spot opens up. So I start creeping in. As I'm pulling in, this dude driving an SUV decides to come from all the way over here behind the gas station, whips around to my left, and thinks he's going to pull into my spot, the one that I had been waiting for. Oh, you know what I said, Nelly. So we're right next to each other, and he's backing in, so he's right there. And both of our windows are down. Oh, they're both down. So, being the big man that I am, I gave it the puffed up my chest. And I said to this grown man, "What are you doing there, buddy?" Don't ever call another man buddy unless you're trying to fight. I knew what I was doing. So as he's pulling in, he says, hey pal, it's going to take like 5 minutes. Just get over it. You see me, man? I was wearing an extra tight suit. I was so mad. I went from 0 to 100 like that. So my voice got deeper. I started to shake. My blood's pumping. You don't talk to me like that. Mm-mm. So I say back to him very calmly, So you think you're just better than every single person in here waiting for gas? And he still really, he wasn't listening to me. He was like, dude, it's fine. Just get over it. It's mine. I'm going to do it. And I was like, mm-mm. So I reached for the car door. The little man inside of me was like, this is not going to happen. And I don't know why I was reaching for the door like I'm going to get out. What was I going to do? But I didn't care. I was ready to show him I meant business. Thankfully, girlfriend at the time, she prevented this through an exchange of words. Somehow she got me to stay in the car, and she probably saved me from getting beat up, or I would like to say I probably would have gotten arrested because I would have beat him up. But before he could drive away, here it is, Nelly. I said some things I'm not proud of, and I will say that right now. I'm not proud of what I said. And the crazy thing is, 5 minutes later, I got my gas still. And now I don't have a girlfriend. It's awesome. But I tell you that story because I laugh about it. And it was the first thing I thought of when I had to sit down and write this. Because the irony in all of that is that I literally just stood up here, played pastor, and preached a sermon. And 30 minutes later, there was a beam of light shining on who I really was. You saw me standing up here. I was doing a good thing. But my heart showed me where I was at. Because it was easy for me to stand up here and talk on the surface, talk about these nice things. But the difficult thing is to talk about what's in here. That exposes you. When we truly confront the issues of our heart, this is when we understand how much we really need Jesus in our lives. How desperate and broken, and in my case, angry, we are when he's not in there. And this is what Jesus meant when he was giving his Sermon on the Mount, when he was talking about anger and lust. Because here's another short story. I'm sorry. It just works really, really well, and I had to tell you. This week, I sit down to write my sermon. I get a call from my neighbor downstairs, and he says, "Hey, someone hit your car." Awesome. So I get up from writing a sermon, and I made sure to take a deep breath, and I go outside, and it's an older couple, and they're visiting their son who lives right across the street in a big house. And the fact that they stayed to find me, you know, they came up to me, they said, "We're so sorry, it was such an accident." And I said, you know, of course I wasn't happy, there's a dent in my car. Oh, and I can't open the driver's side door. That was the real problem. So that's a problem. But deep down, something inside of me this week, maybe it had something to do with writing this sermon, but something told me to tell them right away, it's completely fine. Accidents happen. I've done this a million times. I'm just glad that you guys are okay. The cool part was, the next day, this man and I were discussing insurance stuff over the phone, and he says, I'm sorry that I've been, you know, so slow on getting this done. Somebody today just passed away, my family. So then I was able to tell him, pump the brakes, I don't care. I can crawl over my seat, it's fine. But then I was able to tell him, I'm praying for you, and you have my prayers, and this car stuff can wait. And it's not that big of a deal, what I said, but it felt bigger than it was. Because now I know, just by saying that, just by putting Jesus in this insane new relationship, if I wouldn't have said that, if my heart wasn't in the right place, that wouldn't have happened. If I would have ran out there and said what I said to this other guy, that would not have happened. And when it comes down to it, I think this is really all Jesus wants for us. To live a life with him in our core. That's discipleship. To have his love in our hearts at any given moment. And that's why he says in verse 23, so if you are offering your gift at the altar and then remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. His words in verse 23, they cause us to acknowledge where our hearts are at. It causes us to confess that often, through sinful anger, we can fall short. So that day that I lashed out to this man at the gas station, anger was plaguing my heart. I don't know why. I didn't realize it was there, but it was. Because the second it got a chance, it showed through. And I didn't even know this guy. And the sad part about this is maybe this guy didn't even know Jesus. And I missed the perfect opportunity to introduce them. Because I was a little man. But the thing is, we can trust in our salvation. We can trust in our forgiveness through the reconciliation that Jesus accomplished up here. When he died for us, when he sacrificed his life for our sins, for our anger, for our lust, we were reconciled to God. So then we can be reconciled with each other, with those people we don't know, with those people who make us angry. So when Jesus is talking in Matthew 5, he's talking about these heart issues. That's what they are, heart issues. And he already knows that he will ultimately have to die for the person that is angry. When he is saying this, he knows that will happen. For the people cutting others down in contempt or through insecurity, in my case. He died for us. We all know this because he loves us and he wants to redeem us. He wants to change our hearts, what's in here. He died for us knowing that we're going to struggle with things like anger and lust. And it's easy to recognize that we struggle with these things, but it's harder to do something about it. So then what do we do? Where should our hearts be? Where should we put our hearts? Well, that's why I liked the other verse that we had for today, because I think it lines up perfectly. Caitlin, could you put it up there for me? You were waiting the whole time for that one job. I think I used the ESV version, so it might look a little bit differently. But I have always loved this verse, and I feel like a lot of us have as well. But I'll read it again. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. I want to be a person filled with love, even when people aren't ready to love me back or when they think I'm too small to have a gas pump. I've done this before with this verse, but it helped me to realize how special this verse is, and I want you guys to try this with me really quick. It's super easy. But the greatest gift of love that God gave to us was Jesus, right? His son. So we can say, Jesus is love. We say that. Jesus is the embodiment of love. Oh, you did say, wow, that's power. So I want to do this. I like to reread the passage that we have in 1 Corinthians, but instead of using the word love, I want to use the word Jesus. And I wrote it down so it makes more sense. So read this with me out loud. Jesus is patient and kind. Jesus does not envy or boast. Jesus is not arrogant or rude. Jesus does not insist on his own way. Jesus is not irritable or resentful. Jesus does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Jesus bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. In those times when I lash out, I forget where to put my heart. And when I forget, that's the easiest place to go to remind myself where it should be. Because who did it before me? That guy did. And he's the best example. And if we are Jesus' disciples, if we are his followers, as his followers, it is really, really easy to become lost within our own hearts. Jesus is love. And when he resides within our hearts, when our hearts are filled with that love, we know that he's always going to be walking with us. We don't have to question what we're going to do or how we're going to respond because Jesus is there and he's working. We're not going to be perfect. I'm probably still going to be a little man in certain areas, but this week showed me that it can get better. So just keep Jesus in your hearts. It's in his name we pray. Amen.